Mayor. Matthew Liu and I are going to partner on this as usual. I'm going to talk people, he's going to talk money. So you don't want me crossing over into the financial area. That's dangerous. So some of this is going to be repeat information. It's statistics that the council had previously asked for. Some of it's going to be new. I'm going to start with talking about current related benefits. And we showed you this slide when we met last time. What I put together is a handout sheet that summarizes these, because I'm sure this list doesn't mean a lot to you. As we talk about family medical leave, we're talking about providing a benefit to our employees so that when they have some type of serious FMLA qualifying event, that they don't have a loss of income or it's reduced loss of income. And so as we talk about finding out what that gap is, I think it's important for us to audit our current related benefits and what they are and how they work. And so I'm going to go through this handout really quickly. If you have questions, please feel free to ask, or you can always ask me later as well. Long-term disability is the first item on this list. It's effective the first of the month following date of hire. It is a city-paid benefit, so there's no cost to the employee. Should the employee have some type of injury or illness that prevents them from performing the essential functions of their job, they can be eligible for up to a maximum benefit of 66.67% of pre-disability earnings. So if you think your average city employee, if they retire with 30 years of service, with loggers, they only get 60% of their pay. So this is even greater than someone who had worked here for 30 years under the loggers benefit. We also have voluntary benefits.
Oh, sorry, Kathy, really quick. What does that have to do with what we're talking about? So what can long-term disability
do,
cover for pregnancy or paternal care?
This is more of somebody has, it's not really pregnancy unless they would have some serious complication that prevents them from performing their essential functions of their job, and there's no expectation for them to be able to come back.
Okay.
There's a six-month elimination period with long-term disability. So that means that even if you can get approved, you can't draw payment until you have been off work for 6 months. And so when we talk about our sick leave balances and sick leave buyback, you'll see you have to have 6 months of sick leave on the books before you can sell it back. And that's because that's that safety net that should somebody have a long-term disability, they could use their sick leave until they can be qualified to receive a payment under long-term disability. Did that answer the question?
Sure.
Then we have voluntary benefits, and these are paid for by the employee. They're effective first of the month following date of hire, and there are three different types. There's supplemental hospital indemnity. This covers a hospitalization stay, including normal pregnancy, and there's no waiting period. So if you sign up for this plan and you're pregnant, there's no waiting period for you to be covered. So it's a lump sum tax-free cash payment that's paid directly to the employee, and the amount is based on whatever level the employee likes for coverage.
The amount that they pay in?
It's not the amount they pay in, but the premium that they pay for the level that they select of coverage. Then we have critical illness. So this is designed for someone who has critical illness, such as a heart attack, stroke, or cancer. Again, this is a lump sum, tax-free cash payment paid directly to the employee. And then there's also an off-the-job accident insurance. Again, it's a lump sum, tax-free cash payment for covers out-of-pocket medical expenses and daily expenses. We don't use Aflac, but most people have seen the commercials for Aflac. That's what these products are. They're gap coverage is how I view this. The next one is sick leave, and we've talked a little bit about this. Employees currently earn approximately 18 days per year. We earn on a pay period basis, and so it's 5.54 hours. Fire department 56-hour employees accrue at a different rate. There's no maximum accrual. You start accruing from the day you start, but you're not eligible to use it until after you've been employed here for 30 days. Under our sick leave policy, you're generally allowed up to 240 hours of sick leave for the birth or adoption of a child by an employee, the employee's spouse, or the employee's domestic partner. And you can also use generally up to 24 hours for bereavement leave of the sick leave as well. And the 240 hours for the birth or adoption, if that is, if it's, you know, normal, no medical complications, not an unusual circumstance. If an employee had medical complications, they could obviously use more than the 240 hours of sick leave.
That's what we mean by the generally. Is
that
it's
is correct.
Got some wiggle room.
Exactly.
Okay.
And it would be based on medical. Generally, a normal natural birth is 6 weeks recovery, and for cesarean, it's generally 8 weeks, but that means healthy mom, healthy baby. There could be complications, and the employee could require more use of sick leave. Then we have sick leave advance. This is where employees can be advanced up to 20 working days per calendar year. And when I describe this to employees, I describe it like an interest-free loan. And what I mean by that is the city gives you sick leave, which shows up as money on your paycheck. So that you can get up to 20 days advanced to you. You have to be employed at least a year, be a satisfactory employee, and there has to be an expectation you're going to be able to offset that advance with future accruals. And all of your other accruals have to be exhausted. So this is that, hey, I've run out of everything, I still have a need, we request for the sick leave. Sick leave buyback is the option to sell up to 100% of unused sick leave that is in excess of 6 months. So I mentioned that earlier with the long-term disability, that there's a six-month elimination period. So you can't sell back your sick leave until you have at least 6 months of sick leave on the book, because we don't want you to lose your safety net. Anything you earn that fiscal year that you do not use beyond that 6 months of leave, you can sell back to the city for 50% of your pay. If you're represented by CPOA, you'll see there's a little footnote, and they get 25% of their pay for sick leave buyback. You have to be employed on October 1st to be eligible for it. The check usually comes out in December. Then we have injury leave for police and fire. This is specifically if they've been injured on the job and they have followed all of the requirements to document that injury. They can request to be granted injury leave, and that takes the place of sick leave or is in addition to sick leave. Transitional duty. This is a really, really good program. This program by design is to assist employees in recovery, to help them transition back to work, to keep them connected to the organization, but also reduce the amount of leave that they have to use when they have some type of injury or illness. So again, it's ultimately to promote the safe return back to their regular position. The employees that are eligible are permanent employees unable to perform the essential functions of their regular job for 90 days or less, employees with an approved ADA, Americans with Disability Act accommodation, that's not limited to 90 days, and employees that are injured on the job, and that's not limited to 90 days either. They're allowed to work a maximum of 30 hours per week. They receive regular pay for all hours worked, and they can be renewed for an additional 90 days. So this has been a very successful program. Departments have a list of transitional duty assignments they've submitted to HR that we work with the employee to find out what their restrictions are, what their capabilities are, and we're able to place them in these transitional duty assignments. So you may have sometimes seen employees working at the front desk here in the lobby. Sometimes that's a transitional duty assignment. We also have vacation accruals. I just put the accrual rates in there. I don't think you need me to go over those, but you earn them from the day you start employment. You're eligible to use them after 6 months of employment. Then we have vacation donation, and vacation donation is an opportunity for an employee to donate their vacation to another permanent employee, provided that employee receiving the donation is unable to work because of an FMLA qualifying event. They do not have to be eligible for FMLA, but the reason they're off work has to be an FMLA qualifying event. We changed this ordinance several years ago because our most vulnerable employees are our new employees that are not eligible for FMLA, and so this allows us to donate vacation time to help keep them in pay status.
Any idea of how many days have been donated within, say, the past year?
We can get some data, get back to you on that. We do keep track of the hours that are donated. We also, because employees can accrue a maximum amount of vacation, we have some that are going to lose it if they don't use it, and they donate it to the pool. And so we have a pool that they can donate, that when employees apply for the vacation donation, we can use those dollars instead of losing it.
Is there a minimum amount of time that you have to be here in order to get the vacation donation?
No. The reason you're off work has to be for an FMLA qualifying event. That's really the one requirement. And then I will say the city of Columbia has some of the most generous employees I've ever had the privilege to work with. They are very kind in donating their time to their coworkers. Holidays and floating holidays. We have 9 paid holidays per year. That doesn't include the pending recommendation to add Veterans Day. Employees get 4 floating holidays after 12 continuous months of service, and they're granted on October 1st of each year. You can have a maximum of 10 floating holidays on the books. Then you can sell them back if you're going to go over the max so that you don't lose them. So employees can sell a maximum of 32 hours of floating holidays back at the end of each fiscal year. So those are just kind of a high-level overview. The last thing here is sick leave balances as of the pay period ending August 19th to kind of give you an idea based on years of service, the average hours of sick leave our employees have on the books as of that day. So kind of give you an idea of where we're at and how many hours they need to. Any questions about that? I feel like I went over it pretty fast. So these are a lot of benefits and tools we have to help our employees have income replacement should they be in a situation where they have a serious illness or injury or other FMLA qualifying events. These are some demographics that we provided for you the last time we met. Did you have any questions? Hearing that, I'm going to move on. Again, this is a repeat just to show you how many FMLA hours were approved in calendar year 22 and how many we had as of June 30th, 2023, and how many of those hours were FMLA no pay. So again, trying to kind of identify where's the gap, right? Where are the people that are needing more time than we have available through our programs? And then we have sick leave usage, and I'm going to let Matthew talk about this because this is where we start getting into the dollar amount. And Matthew, tell me what won't be the report.
So, fiscal year 22, we had 138,000 hours used by 1,200 employees for around $3.5 million per hour average of $24 an hour. Sick leave buyback, hopefully Tuman had a question about that just previously, but there were 35,000 basically hours bought back by 271 employees for roughly $500,000 of basically $15 per hour. So year to date, well, it's not necessarily year to date, as of July the 8th, we've had 104 hours used by 1,200 employees, about $2.7 million at an average of $26.16 per hour.
Can I ask a quick clarifying question?
Yes.
So 271 employees, that is how many employees in FY22 were able to or did sell their sick leave?
Did, not able to, okay. Yeah.
That is a good question, because employees can choose not to participate,
right?
Not to maintain their balance.
So here we broke down the leave accruals and the cost of the current benefits. So for the floating holiday, and this includes holidays taken and paid out, we were at 48,000 hours for about $1.2 million. Police and fire injury leave, 449 hours for $13,000. Normal sick leave, 138,000 hours for about $3.5 million. And then the sick leave buyback, 35,000 hours for $500,000. Vacation time, a little over 100,000 hours. For a total of $3.1 million, and then vacation paid out 32,000 hours for just under 900,000. Yes.
How do each of these items fit within the budget? In other words, are these budgeted items, each one of these, and these are the actual expenses for these?
They
or is
are.
This extra budgetary in some way?
They are budgeted in personnel.
Yeah.
And so some of these have their own categories of personnel and so forth. But that is the way that they've currently.
So these are all expenses we anticipate within the budget.
Yes.
Okay. Is that 9.2? Is that what we're? I'm basically lumping this as time off, the time off ones. Is that, you know, what is it? Is that kind of what it's been? You know, how is that trending?
I don't know that for sure now, and I can't look at that and get back to you.
Okay.
I'll know that. Okay. Okay. So now we'll come to the FMLA pay. So these are hours that are paid out for FMLA time, but coded to the four different categories. So you have comp, floating holidays, sick, and vacation. Had 800 hours taken as comp, 600 floating holiday, 24,000 hours for sick leave, and just under 3,000 for vacation. For a total of 29,000 hours. About $745,000. Long-term disability premium, we put that out because that is something that is paid by the city for all. It's not a per occurrence type of pay. It's a per year. And that's last year we spent $201,000 on that.
Do we know how much was used of long-term disability?
I believe just now coming back.
I know Heather
pulled
some data.
Sam,
why don't you let Heather look up and go on to the next slide.
Okay,
And as a reminder, though, you said earlier, I mean, a lot of the things that we're talking about for paid family leave don't necessarily qualify for long-term disability.
Right.
Okay.
That's correct. It's another income replacement for our employees should they not be able to return to their job.
Right.
So basically, the grand total for our leave pool is just over $10 million for the fiscal year.
So the next is, we did a little bit of research for paid family leave comparisons. HR staff called around, looked on websites, tried our best to get some information. The first organizations you're going to see are those peer agencies that were identified by the city as part of our class and comp study, so that's why they were selected. And what these charts really show you is, do they offer paid family medical leave? Does it require them to be approved for FMLA? How much do they give? And any additional information. And you'll see on this first page, these are parental leave only, not for all types of family medical leave. And then these organizations do not provide paid family medical leave. Then again, we tried contacting some local organizations. That's the council seemed to have some interest to see what our local companies are doing. Those that are private employers, we do not have them listed. Those that are public, we do. I will note, Andrea, I know, is aware of this, but the universities, I think, takes effect in January of 24, but we went ahead and used their January of 24 information. And most of these are maternity or paternity leave, and the university has the additional caregiver leave. And then these four local agencies do not provide paid family medical leave. So, just some comparisons to the local market. Sick leave, again, this is a repeat of what we showed you. These were the peer agencies part of the class and comp study. The city has the highest amount of sick leave accrual with an unlimited balance. We pulled some information from local organizations, and it's really not apples to apples. You know, Columbia Public Schools and the University of Missouri, depends on what type of employee you are, you get different amounts. Paid time off or PTO is a very different model than what the city of Columbia has. That's when everything's in one bucket and you can use it for anything versus having specific vacation time and sick leave hours. But this is just information we collected, again, on local organizations. long-term disability. Again, these are the peers from the class and comp study. You can see that the City of Columbia has the highest percentage of pay for long-term disability, and there is, all of them are paid by the employer except for Columbia, South Carolina. Their employees pay a cost to have long-term disability insurance. With local organizations, it is mostly employee paid. There's a mix of employee paid versus employer paid and different rates of percentage of pay. So, sure, Heather's got the LTD numbers for you.
So, the total amount that was paid out to former employees was $152,423, and a total of 17 employees utilized that.
Short-term disability. The City of Columbia does not offer short-term disability. Our 18 days of sick leave act as our short-term disability, but this shows, again, the benchmark cities that provide short-term disability, because that is also an option as well. And it is a combination of employee paid versus employer paid, and from 60 to 66 and two-thirds percentage of pay. And local organizations, again, it's a combination of employee and employer paid. 60% was the highest percentage of pay on short-term disability for the local organizations. Now we get to the financial. When we last met, Councilperson Wehner asked us to provide an estimate on costs for 10 weeks of paid FMLA. So we have what is a conservative minimum annual cost for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, and 10 weeks. And Matthew, do you want to talk about the dollar amounts?
And so these are based on the fiscal year 22 actuals. We wouldn't expect to see these numbers increase if something like this was implemented, but these are the actual minimum amounts that we would believe that we would see come across for the
if we say minimum, all the benefits that we talked about, we expect that more employees would apply for it. The numbers would increase. Our pay, we obviously have a proposal to increase employee pay, so that's going to change that amount. It will also potentially impact how many employees can sell back floating holiday, how many employees can sell back sick leave, how much employees are paid out for vacation and floating holiday. When they exit the organization, we expect those numbers to increase. In addition to if we have to step somebody up to fill a role, pay them more, overtime, acting pay, these are all numbers that we don't really know what the impact will be. And so we just want to bring to your attention that there are these variables that are difficult to quantify at this point, how they'll be impacted. And that kind of leads into staff recommendations. And we proposed two recommendations. And the reason behind this, and Matthew, step in if you have anything to add, is really we don't know the full cost impact. We do think it's important to provide the best benefits possible to our employees. And so we had a proposal to do a one-time deposit of 240 hours, which is the equivalent of basically 6 weeks, for an employee into a designated paid family medical leave account. People could use it on a prorated basis. They could use it for continuous, intermittent, reduced schedule. I know that was a concern we heard previously. They would get paid at 100% of their regular pay. In this proposal, they would be able to use it after they had exhausted their other accruals. And the reason that we had suggested that is that will help us truly measure how much is needed to fill that gap, right? Where are the gaps? How much is needed? And then our idea was to collect data. We have a baseline on what our costs are. This would allow us to collect data to see how much is our overtime impacted, how much is our floating holiday and vacation and all of those things. How much is it increasing by us providing additional leave? This is patterned after what, for those of you who remember during COVID, we did a COVID leave where we had a bucket of leave that we gave to all employees and they used it if they needed it for a qualifying event. So it's patterned after that, for those of you that remember that.
when you say the after all applicable accruals are exhausted, what are those applicable accruals?
So depending on what their situation is, it could be sick leave, it could be vacation, it could be floating holiday, it could be comp time. And here's why I say that, because you have FMLA, which is like the umbrella that says your time is protected under the law or it's not. Then you have the city's leave policies, which are in ordinance that say how you can use your leave time. And I'm going to give you an example of an FMLA qualifying event that you wouldn't be able to use your sick leave for right away. So the way the ordinance is currently written is if you have a parent, and let's say they're in the care of a at the hospital, you're not caring for them, you are not able to use sick leave for that until you've exhausted your other accruals. If you were caring for your sick parent in their home or some other location, then you would be able to use sick leave. So having an FMLA approved event does not necessarily equate to use of sick leave. You have to apply the city's leave policies. Did that help?
So you might use vacation in that case, or
floating
holiday. Right, and once you, and the way our ordinance is written is once you exhaust all those, then you can use sick leave if your family member is still in the care of someone else. Did that answer the question?
Yes.
So we thought the council would have some concerns about employees being required to use all their applicable accruals. So we came up with a staff recommendation B, and the big difference for this one is that it would be at 80% of the pay, and they would not have to exhaust all their other accruals prior to using it. We still think employees would want to use their accruals first because they would be at 100% pay. Again, this helps us figure out like how many people really need this to fill the gap, right? So those are the proposals. Matthew, Jim, Heather, did I miss anything?
Can you clarify something? So on proposal A, you have the paid at 100%. Employees will be compensated at their regular rate of pay. And then on the next one says paid at 80%. What, walk me through what is that mean?
What does that mean? So I'm at 80%. For example, it could look a couple of different ways depending on how it was implemented. But if you had somebody who was off, let's say, a week, and they need 40 hours of leave to cover that, 80% of that would be 32 hours, and then they would have to use 8 hours of their time to do it. Or it could just be you get 80% of your pay for any hours that are used for this bank.
Okay.
So there's a couple of different ways you could implement this.
What's attached to the agenda has an additional bullet point. So is that a typo?
It did. I thought it was confusing because it said employees would be compensated at their regular rate of pay. And so I thought that's confusing when it's really at 80%.
Okay.
So, and I wanted to clarify, there's a couple of different ways you can do that.
Okay. So. Okay. And then an additional clarifying one that I just had, the one-time deposit of 240 hours, that's equivalent to 6 weeks off. Is that forever?
So
like for that employee, you get one kid?
So our proposal was for a two-year time frame that we do a one-time deposit of 240 hours to measure it, determine what is really needed in the scope of that. So it is in addition to all their other leave that they have as well. So that was the proposal, a one-time deposit, and anybody who's hired, we would give them that one-time deposit of 240 hours for that two-year time frame.
That's also implying that at 2 years, we stopped doing this program.
No.
So I think maybe a better way to say is like, for this period of time, we're giving 240 hours.
And yeah, it sort of feels like a
pilot, which is a really awkward thing to say. We're trying to use it for recruitment and be like, get in now before this goes away, this program.
Good point. We were thinking of it, this is a way for us to measure it and figure out what is really the need, where are the gaps, and how big does this program need to be. I will say one of my concerns was if you do 10 weeks and let's just say there's some negative impact to that, it's very hard to back down. It's easier to grow, right? And say, this isn't enough, we need to do more. And so that was part of the thought process. Because one of the things we don't talk about is that, and I know the council knows this, but the staff are overburdened on a regular basis, and we don't know what the impact will fully be if employees are able to be off longer. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but we also have to look at that side of it as well as the workload and us being able to continue our services.
Yeah, Don.
So new employee or current employees, they get to 240 in the designated family medical leave account. They work their career whenever they leave. Do they get paid? Does that 240 get paid out or not?
No.
Okay.
It is not compensable. It's really, our recommendation is really to fill a gap, right? Somebody who really needs it and doesn't have the time to cover because they have this serious matter going on in their personal life.
Right. I understand the purpose of it, but
yeah.
So it's not going to be treated exactly like your other benefits that you, when you leave, you can get paid out.
That is correct.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So Matthew, you had done some numbers on looking at 6 weeks was $1.3 million. If you were kind of looking at what we had, 8 weeks,
minimums.
Right, 1.7. So is that also what we're thinking? And then we have two recommendations before us. And I'll be frank, like I'm not a fan of using all your accruals because I did that twice here. So using all your accruals and then coming back to work without being able to take off sick with a sick kid, not good for recruitment. But when we talk about these dollar amounts, you have a recommendation that only at 100% is it using all those accruals. Is that 1.3 for that, or is that the idea of that 80% that is in recommendation B? I'm sorry?
That would be 100%.
Okay, so, I mean, the using of accruals thing, like why is that the difference between the two? Why can't we do 100%? Why can't you see that 100% for the 6 weeks rather than using all the accruals?
We absolutely can. And so, like I said, we knew there was probably not going to be support for that, but we also want to be able to measure is it needed. And so the idea was, do you really need it at 80%? You would probably want to use your 100% of your accruals first. That's truly we're trying to figure out how to measure the impact.
So when we did COVID leave, that was a line item on timesheets, regardless of if you were hourly or salary, you still submitted. Why couldn't we measure this at 100% and having people just fill out, this is part of my
pay? You can.
Okay.
You can.
I think the idea is that as you're looking at this type of benefit, which is newer for us, it's just understanding that, I think with this one, it allows employees to basically have some skin in the game. So instead of just saying...
They're literally are making
skin. I know. I understand. I agree.
Okay.
But it's just a thought process. And so, you know, we're trying to introduce something new. And so, you know, when you look at all our other benefits, then we are benefit rich. Not that that's a bad thing, because I think we need to be able to go out and try to get people to come onto our organization. And I think this will actually help us do that. The idea was when trying to roll it out, what's the best way to roll it out? I think, you know, staff recommendation A, that gave me a little heartburn as well. But I think, you know, B is a fine approach if we want to increase that pay at, if you want to say 95%, if you want to say 100%. I think that's fine. It's just understanding what that will get.
Well, and I appreciate, thank you for letting me be candid with some of the conversation. And I think... And I know that there's also that concern over you don't want anyone to abuse the system or take advantage of. And I do know there's going to be that demand on staff, both for the processing from finance and HR. So being realistic, this is like short-term rentals. Tell us what it's going to take to actually implement a program like that and be realistic. So maybe doing like a six-month check-in on how is the data looking, how is the staffing for this.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the hard part for us is we don't know what we don't know.
Exactly.
And so there's a lot of people who would not even think about FMLA because I have my sick. Like when I went out for surgery,
right.
I took a week of 40 hours of sick leave because that was my process. I didn't even think about FMLA. And so you have a lot of employees who have not thought about FMLA. I think having a paid leave, you're going to have more employees take advantage of that. So we will see an increase in costs. And what that is, we don't know yet. And I think the idea is we want to be able to measure that to understand exactly what that impact is.
But the research doesn't support that it's a negative impact.
It does not. But there's things that we do have. So right now we...
Please do not start talking about the disability.
I'm not talking about disability. But I'm talking about like sick leave buyback. And so that is a cost that we'll have to make sure we account for, because when people leave, you know, we have the sick leave buyback, we have the vacation payout. So all of those do end up to our unfunded liability that we have to make sure that we understand exactly what that is. So those are things that we do have to keep account of.
Understanding. Okay, so we are at 6:48. The reason for having this discussion here is if we want to propose an amendment to include with our fiscal year budget this evening to have this discussion. So I imagine we'll continue this discussion during that part of the council meeting. But so in the last kind of 5 minutes, because I want to give us a little bit of break to get into your seats for your 7 o'clock meeting, what questions does council have in this venue? Nick Foster.
Carlin said that we're benefit rich, and I think that's an accurate description. I also am wondering how much, this is a squishy question, you're not going to be able to answer this, but I'm just wondering what kind of impact this might have. Do we have any information from staff, formally and informally, about the need for this, and whether or not this has an impact on someone coming to work for us, for instance, or retention being an issue?
So, I do not have any data, you know, numbers for you. I think one of our labor groups is going to speak tonight. They are, you know, want paid family leave. We have heard from them. We do an annual benefit survey, and so part of what we wanted to do is you go with the one-time dump while we measure it to determine. What we do, we want to get a question in our benefit survey that goes out to our employees and say, hey, is this something that you want? Are you satisfied? Do you want more of this? You know, is this a high priority item for you? So we can get real data from our employees. I will say that most of what we hear from our employees, which is not going to be a surprise from anyone here, is about pay. What are we going to do about compression? Pay is their biggest concern that HR staff is hearing from our employees.
And that's why they're selling their sick time back too.
So the process for this, if the discussion will have potential the budget amendment, but the actual logistics of this is obviously within, we're setting kind of this high level policy goal of what it is. And anything that will change would that come back to council for decision?
It will, because it's going to require a
change to Chapter 19.
Yes. Yeah, we're going to have that ordinance change. I already had a draft policy that I keep changing out based on what we hear. So I have a draft policy ready, depending, just plugging in the right information based on what the council decides to do. But we will have to come back to council to get official and to implement it. And we were targeting a January 2024 date.
Okay. Any other just quick questions before I adjourn us to go into our next meeting? No? Thank you so much for putting it all together. Appreciate it. We're adjourned. See you in 9 minutes.